Welcome to the Bogosity Podcast for the 25th of January, 2016. The podcast that isn't blind, but it is cross-eyed. This is your host, Shane Killian, and joining me again is Charles Thomas. Charlie, welcome back to the show.
Buried on these 16 inches of snow and counting.
Oh, better you than me. We got like 2 inches here and I'm going nowhere.
Yeah.
And this week we're going to focus our News of the Bogus segment on another single subject. This time the goings on with Bitcoin, because this is big, and however it gets resolved, it's going to have lasting ramifications, and yet basically everyone in the news media is misrepresenting it.
Surprise, surprise.
So Bitcoin is dead for, what was it, like the 38th time I think someone counted?
Get up to 40, you get a free sub.
Yeah, that's like 29 more than a cat gets or something like that.
Yeah.
So after the news we're going to cover broke, the Bitcoin price fell 10% and everyone's like, see, 10%, that means it's dead, it's over. And that was the big crash from which Bitcoin would never recover. And just a few days later, it rallied to well over $400.
So once again, the sky's falling, but not really.
But I'm getting ahead of myself. Let me tell you about what started all of this. Bitcoin developer Mike Hearn, he wasn't one of the core developers, but he developed a lot of Bitcoin software. He pointed out lots of problems stemming from the way the core devs are doing things. And I'm going to read here through his article, The Resolution of the Bitcoin Experiment. And I should point out, and we'll talk about this, the lead developer Gavin Andreessen and some others are saying that he's too pessimistic and it does mean the death of Bitcoin, but they're not saying that he's factually incorrect. They're acknowledging that these are problems that need to be fixed and they're working on it. So what Hearn says is, quote, despite knowing that Bitcoin could fail all along, the now inescapable conclusion that it has failed still saddens me greatly. The fundamentals are broken, and whatever happens to the price in the short term, the long-term trend should probably be downwards. I will no longer be taking part in Bitcoin development and have sold all of my coins. Why has Bitcoin failed? It has failed because the community has failed. What was meant to be a new decentralized form of money that lacked systematically important institutions and too big to fail has become something even worse, a system completely controlled by just a handful of people. Worse still, the network is on the brink of technical collapse. The mechanisms that should have prevented this outcome have broken down, and as a result, there's no longer much reason to think Bitcoin can actually be better than the existing financial system.
It's a little disturbing because, well, if you look at the news and financial stuff lately, the euro is going to be in trouble, and later still, the United States dollar is going to be in a bit of a trouble soon, too, so... Yeah.
Well, and the whole point of Bitcoin was that you were taking it away from a central authority, and what they're ending up with now is a sort of central authority.
So, in the end, it always comes back to people who have power. They just want to hoard more of it and get, like, they have the haves and have not sort of thing.
Yeah, it's like they're trying to protect their little treasure trove. But what was really the catalyst for all of this is a limitation they've run into. When Satoshi Nakamoto first invented Bitcoin, he put a cap of 1 megabyte per block in place just to keep things manageable. That was supposed to be a temporary thing, and it was supposed to be removed or increased as time went on. That hasn't happened. And what that means is that you can only have so many transactions in a block. And of course, Bitcoin is set up so that you solve a block every 10 minutes. So however many transactions that is it can handle, that's all you can do in 10 minutes. And what's happened is that the amount of transactions, and he shows graphs for all this, and this the nice little growth curve that we've all come to expect. Well, guess what? At some point, you're going to hit that barrier. And actually, that's what's happened, at least in peak times. There are just so many transactions being put into the blockchain that they can't all be solved in 10 minutes and they have to queue up. So what's supposed to happen is that when you have a whole bunch of transactions going at one time, it's sort of like we've talked about the surge pricing with Uber, you know, where you raise the transaction fee. And then people who say, well, you know, my transaction doesn't really have to happen right away, I can wait a while, they can wait a while and then people can pay this higher fee to kind of get more towards the front of the line. The problem is it's actually become such a big fee that it's actually more than what they would charge you to do a credit card transaction.
I do see some people not liking that at all.
But also, one of the big selling points of Bitcoin was that the transaction fees were nowhere near what you were paying with credit card fees. Because remember, there was that big controversy a few years ago when people started getting wise to how much of transactions were actually taken in credit card fees. And so Bitcoin was like, oh, the transactions are just a tiny bit of that. Well, now it's grown up to about that, at least during peak times.
Part of me wants to say this is a good thing because if it was the opposite, we will probably be saying the lack of people going to Bitcoin and, well, you know.
Yeah, they're going to have to increase the block size, but that's exactly what they're fighting because they're afraid that doing this might cause a split and investor panic and cause the Bitcoin price to plummet. And especially since so many miners are in China and, you know, they talk about the great firewall of China that blocks you from moving so much. But what a lot of people don't know is it's actually really, really slow. You know, imagine trying to do things on a worse than 2G connection. We're talking almost back to dial-up speeds there, and they don't want to lose all these Chinese miners.
Are there people in the United States or say in the UK or whatever who are going to take that slack up? That's going to be the question.
They just keep kicking the can down the road, but they can't really do that anymore. And the nice thing about Bitcoin is it's open source, so anyone can take it and modify it, and they've done just that. There's a technology called Bitcoin XT, which increases the block size to 2 megabytes and can do further increases up to 8 megabytes. And that will happen when 75% of the solved blocks support it. The problem is, I mean, this thing has gotten a lot of attention. BitPay has gone over to it. Blockchain.info has gone over to it. When Coinbase went over to it, and that's one of the biggest Bitcoin companies in the U.S. That's where I do my Bitcoin transactions. If you donate to Bogosity using Bitcoin, even if you used it directly through the address, you're going through Coinbase. So they went over to Bitcoin XT, and they found themselves erased from the official Bitcoin website and banned from the community forums because they went over to this alternative.
Wow, that's, if you design to be open source, prepared to have things that are better than your original, the cream always rises to the top. It's not set in.
So Hearn says, quote, "In the span of only about 8 months, Bitcoin has gone from being a transparent and open community to one that is dominated by rampant censorship and attacks on Bitcoiners by other Bitcoiners. This transformation is by far the most appalling thing I have ever seen, and the result is that I no longer feel comfortable being associated with the Bitcoin community. In August 2015, it became clear that due to severe mismanagement, the Bitcoin Core project that maintains the program that runs the peer-to-peer network wasn't going to release a version that raised the block size limit. So some long-term developers, including me, got together and developed the necessary code to raise the limit. That code was called BIP101, and we released it in a modified version of the software that we branded Bitcoin XT. By running XT, miners could cast a vote for changing the limit. Once 75% of blocks were voting for the change, the rules would be adjusted and bigger blocks would be allowed. The admin of the Bitcoin.org website and top discussion forums frequently allowed discussion of outright criminal activity on the forums he controlled on the grounds of freedom of speech, but when XT launched, he claimed it did not represent the developer census and was therefore not really Bitcoin. So he decided to do whatever it took to kill XT completely, starting with censorship of Bitcoin's primary communication channels. Any post that mentioned the words Bitcoin XT was erased from the forums he controlled. XT could not be mentioned or linked to from anywhere on the official Bitcoin.org website. And of course, anyone attempting to point users to other uncensored forums was also banned. Massive number of users were expelled from the forums and prevented from expressing their views.
Because that's always worked. Censorship always works, said Stalin, Hitler. You don't want to be part of that company. Currency is like the most democratic thing out there. I mean, you vote with your wallet. You vote with your whatever you're using.
So he mentions Gavin Andreessen. I mentioned him earlier. He's the guy who was handpicked by Satoshi Nakamoto to take over and run Bitcoin. And Gavin brought in four other developers, and apparently it's these four developers that are a problem, especially one named Gregory Maxwell. When Satoshi years ago was asked about this issue about how Bitcoin could grow, what he said was, quote, "The bandwidth might not be as prohibitive as you think. If the network were to get as big as Visa, it would take several years, and by then, sending the equivalent of two high-def movies over the internet would probably not seem like a big deal."
Yeah, he was right.
Yeah, but we've still got this limit, and they refuse to raise it. And what Maxwell said in December 2014 is, quote, "Problems with decentralization as Bitcoin grows are not going to diminish either. There is an inherent trade-off between scale and decentralization when you talk about transactions in the network. As Bitcoin transaction volume increases, larger companies will likely be the only ones running Bitcoin nodes because of the inherent cost." But the problem is, that's what's happening now. And both Mike Hearn and Gavin Andreessen have spent a lot of time debunking that idea. And the whole point of Bitcoin was decentralization, and so here's Maxwell doing the exact opposite.
You know, they want to keep it within their range of power. Same thing with what's going on with our major financial companies. That's how we our financial situations right now. They want to keep the people in their circles and such. These guys really do own the whole thing. They want to keep the elite. They want to keep things controlled. And this is a smaller situation. These people want to keep their own little party. They want to keep this thing to themselves, like to keep the wealth to themselves and give the crumbs to the other people who use Bitcoin. They want you to have the crumbs, not the whole pie, as it were. That's why I see it as.
If you're on the Wi-Fi in a coffee shop or hotel, anyone on that network can get your traffic. Do you really trust all of those strangers? For that matter, do you really trust your ISP? A VPN can protect you from prying eyes, disguise your location, and even foil government censors. It's essential in this day and age, so go to vpn.pagosity.tv and you'll be taken to BoxPN. Starting at just $2.99 a month, you can get unlimited high-speed connections to VPN servers all over the world, and they don't log connections, so your privacy is assured. Traveling abroad, just VPN home, and don't worry about what those other governments are doing. Back at home, stop your ISP from traffic shaping and messing with the quality internet access you're paying good money for. You can connect from multiple machines at once, including your smartphone or tablet, and it supports all the secure standards, including OpenVPN and SSTP. Bypass sensors and surveillance with your own secure VPN connection. Go to vpn.pagosity.tv. So Hearn explains, quote, "As Bitcoin became more popular and traffic started approaching the 1 megabyte limit, the topic of raising the block size limit was occasionally brought up between the developers, but it quickly became an emotionally charged subject. Accusations were thrown around that raising the limit was too risky, that it was against decentralization, and so on. Like many small groups, people preferred to avoid conflict. The can was kicked down the road. Complicating things further, Maxwell founded a company that then hired several other developers. Not surprisingly, their views then started to change to align with that of their new boss. In May 2015, Gavin decided the subject must be tackled once and for all, whilst there was still about 8 months remaining. He began writing articles that worked through the arguments against raising the limit one at a time. But it quickly became apparent that the Bitcoin Core developers were hopelessly at loggerheads. Maxwell and the developers he had hired refused to contemplate any increase in the limit whatsoever. They were barely even willing to talk about the issue. They insisted that nothing be done without consensus, and the developer who was responsible for making the releases was so afraid of conflict that he decided that any controversial topic in which one side might win simply could not be touched at all and refused to get involved. Thus, despite the fact that exchanges, users, wallet developers, and miners were all expecting a rise, and indeed had been building entire businesses around the assumption that it would happen, three of the five developers refused to touch the limit.
This was their big test, and they failed because they're too cowardly to say, okay, this is something we need to do. Where was the leadership in this situation?
So despite all the censorship, within a few days after Bitcoin XT was launched, about 15% of all the network nodes were running it, and at least one mining pool was allowing BIP 101 votes. So then what happened? denial of service attacks, and these were bad ones. There were entire data centers that were completely disconnected by the DDoS attack, and they couldn't get going again until the single XT node inside them was taken down. And in one case, one XT node being DDoSed took down an entire rural ISP covering about 5 towns. They lost internet access completely for several hours because of these attacks until the one guy with the XT node took it down. And even Coinbase, who finally lost patience and went with XT, like I said, they were forced offline for a while by a DDoS attack.
This is what happens when you don't have a true guy with vision, and I don't see anyone stepped up here. There was no real leadership saying, okay, this is what we need to do. Again, no leadership.
So the two oldest developers, Jeff Garzik and Gavin Andreessen, and those are the two who have been supporting the block increase while the others haven't, they wrote a joint article called Bitcoin is being hotwired for settlement, and in it they said, quote, core block size does not change. There has been zero compromise on that issue. In an optimal, transparent, open source environment, a BIP would be produced. By the way, BIP is Bitcoin Improvement Proposal. This has not happened. One of the explicit goals of the Scaling Bitcoin workshops was to funnel the chaotic core block size debate into an orderly decision-making process. That did not occur. In hindsight, Scaling Bitcoin stalled a block size decision while transaction fee price and block space pressure continued to increase. And that was what a lot of them were saying. Well, we're not going to go over to Bitcoin XT because we're waiting for this conference and it's going to rise at the conference. And then the conference happened and nothing changed.
So again, no leadership. No one took charge.
Well, no one can take charge. I mean, that's part of the thing about it, but it still means that, you know, you're locked in. As long as there can be no compromise among the core developers, this is what you have.
What I see here is, again, I know there's like, there's no one can tell, but you need someone to convince to smooth things over instead of, again, kicking the can down the road. Like that one developer who did not like conflict. Again, they had even conferences, and I look here, they didn't even discuss it. They were so afraid of the consequences. They were so afraid of pissing people off. But someone had to take the responsibility and the consequences. No one wanted to take that responsibility. That's what I see it as.
And it gets even worse. Again, the problem is that as you get more and more transactions, that transaction fee goes up and up and up. And so someone does a Bitcoin transaction, putting in what they think is a high transaction fee that'll get them to the front of the line. They submit it to the blockchain. Then the transaction fee goes up, and now they're at the back of the line. So their solution, which has been pretty much universally condemned by the entire Bitcoin community, was to allow people, after the transaction has been submitted but before it's been confirmed, to make changes to it. And the idea is that if they see that the transaction fee went up, they can go in and set a bigger transaction fee and go to the front of the line. The problem is it lets them change everything about the transaction. So if it's a case where you're an online merchant and you can wait a couple of hours for the backlog to get through and then you confirm and then you send out the merchandise, that's fine. But we want Bitcoin ATMs. We want Bitcoin used in stores. In order to do that, you have to get the money or the product right away. You can't have the line backing up while you do these transactions one by one. Now, there's a little bit of risk in that. So far, they've been able to manage those risks because it basically only happens if something goes really wrong. But what this change allows is you go to a store and buy something, or you go to a Bitcoin ATM and you get money. The transaction isn't confirmed yet. You go out the door and you just hit a button on your rogue Bitcoin client. And what it does is it modifies the transaction you just made to change the Bitcoin address to your own, so the coins come back to you and the merchant doesn't get it. So you've effectively stolen that money and stolen those products. And who's going to go over to Bitcoin as long as that's the case?
Exactly. Well, I don't see with the people in charge of developing Bitcoin. Again, I see another kicking the can down the road scenario, because they're going to probably do the same thing what they've done here. they sit on a problem. Instead of trying to find ways to solve problems and issues, they sit and they sit and they wait and they wait until the problem gets so huge, so massive that nothing can be done. People lose faith and boom, Bitcoin takes a big hit. I can see why, the man left, Mike Kern, cause he's like, there's so much indecision. So many people want to control Bitcoin. I don't want this thing to end, but it looks like with the people ahead of it, there's too much indecision, too much corruption. So he left.
So he does conclude on a little bit of an optimistic note. He says, quote, Bitcoin has no future whilst it's controlled by fewer than 10 people, and there's no solution in sight for this problem. Nobody even has any suggestions. For a community that is always worried about the blockchain being taken over by an oppressive government, it's a rich irony. Still, all is not yet lost. Despite everything that has happened, in the past few weeks, more members of the community have started picking things up from where I am putting them down. Where making an alternative to Core was once seen as renegade, there are now two more forks vying for attention, Bitcoin Classic and Bitcoin Unlimited. So far, they've hit the same problems as XT, but it's possible a fresh set of faces could find a way to make progress. There are many talented and energetic people working in the Bitcoin space, and in the past 5 years, I've had the pleasure of getting to know many of them. Their entrepreneurial spirit and alternate perspectives on money, economics, and politics were fascinating to experience, and despite how it's all gone down, I don't regret my time with the project. I woke up this morning to find people wishing me well in the uncensored form and asking me to stay, but I'm afraid I've moved on to other things. To those people, I say, good luck, stay strong, and I wish you the best.
I think what Bitcoin represents and what Bitcoin is doing is a very interesting, and so I think it's a really noble thing, making another currency that is viable for people around the world and another alternative. But it does have some really deep issues. And I feel that Mr. Hearn, he just got frustrated with the people inside it.
Now you can make Amazon purchases with Bitcoin by going to purse.bogosity.tv. That's P-U-R-S-E. Moreover, most purchases can be made at a discount. Save an average of 20% just by buying from Purse, or get even greater discounts by linking your Amazon wish list. Go to purse.bogosity.tv.
Bogosity.tv is a participant in the Amazon Services LLC Associates Program, an affiliate advertising program designed to provide a means for sites to earn advertising fees by advertising and linking to Amazon.com. Just clear your cookies and go to Amazon.bogosity.tv, or check the right-hand side of the podcast page for Amazon's best deals, including the deal of the day and limited-time lightning deals on all sorts of great products. So next time you buy online, go to Amazon.bogosity.tv. Now, like I said, no one's been able to say he's factually incorrect, but he did honk off those developers, and they've been spreading conspiracy theories about him, so he does have a follow-up where he addresses those. This is going quite long, and we've got some other things to talk about, so I won't go through it, but the link's in the show notes. You can look through that.
It just seems like every time that someone did this, there's always like a conspiracy theory. They think it's always something else. It's always something else.
Well, it's just because they don't want to deal with the facts, and a conspiracy theory is a great way of avoiding that.
Yeah, it just seems like people want to believe what they want to do. Say they want to jump to that next conclusion. It's more sexy, some say, you know. They like to make things bigger, like, well, you know, something more interesting instead of, well, what is there?
All right, so like I said, Gavin Andreessen himself had tweeted that Mike's too pessimistic. Gavin's been involved with these alternatives, so he agrees with the problems, but he believes they can be addressed, as does Blockstream CEO Austin Hill, who pointed out, quote, Bitcoin is not dead. We're going through a similar process that early IETF and ICANN went through, and those are two of the big internet standards organizations. So a lot of these are just growing pains. The things you just might have is something goes from being kind of the freak show over in the margins to getting to where it's actually becoming part of society.
I don't want to see Bitcoin go away because the currency situations, you know, you need alternatives. And if Bitcoin does fall away, I guarantee you the people behind it and the people who are doing Bitcoin Class and Bitcoin Unlimited, they'll find something else and they will make something even bigger and better. So I'm not going to be people going to like, you know, it's the end of the world. It's not. It's going to be a setback, but I think there's going to be something even better in on the long haul.
And of course, all of these alternatives are voting for the BIP 101 to raise the block size to 2 megs. And according to NewsBTC, they've already gained 72% consensus. And as soon as they go to 75%, the block size will increase. So as long as they can do that, and as long as they can stop this thing about being able to change transactions once they're out there, then that'll be a lot better.
Yeah. So again, there's a positive thing here. So again, I'm not a Bitcoin user, but if you are one, don't be too worried. Are you worried, Shane, by the way?
No, and neither is Mike Belsha, the CEO of BitGo. He co-invented the Speedy protocol and was one of the principal authors of HTTP 2.0. And so he has his analysis called Bitcoin Block Size in the Future. And he says, today, one of BitGo's major customers complained to us that their transactions weren't getting confirmed. Why not? Well, because the blocks are full. They put the right fee on the transaction. BitGo's platform dynamically computes the right fee every time, but a sudden spike in demand left their transactions lingering for hours. It's not okay that our current small Bitcoin exchanges are suffering due to Bitcoin Core flailing. And so he has his points about this, and the first is how it's engineering run amok. I'm sorry, engineers of Bitcoin, but you're wrong in your fears that a larger block will break Bitcoin. You're doing what Donald Knuth told you not to do. Premature optimization. We have no hard data that indicates a 2 megabyte block will be a significant issue with block propagation or centralization. If you're right, and larger blocks do require more optimization, we'll optimize and fix once we've seen the real bottleneck. From my own experience building HTTP 2.0, there's only one thing I know about optimizations. You never know what to optimize until you've tried it.
Yeah, and that's true. You have to stress test.
The second point is we already have consensus. Data shows that more than 90% of the community already supports at least a 2-meg block. If 90% is not enough for consensus, then I don't know what is.
Well, you have to look at, say, the 10%. Maybe it's like 91%. Maybe they're waiting for 91%.
Number three, Bitcoin is already centralized. The core argument against larger blocks is that it will lead to more centralization. I wish it weren't the case, but this war has already been lost. First, it was pooled mining, and later it was advances in hardware which left individual nodes in the dust. But no matter how you slice it, Bitcoin can be overtaken by only taking out a handful of companies. Sure, this isn't as centralized as a product like eGold with single governance, but it certainly isn't the decentralized mecca that Satoshi had envisioned either. Don't get me wrong, we all want a decentralized system, but the block size isn't the key here. Number four, he mentions a couple of their solutions that they were proposing, SegWit and Lightning, and he says they're distant dreams. If you think decentralization is hard in existing Bitcoin, think how hard it will be to punt the problem up a layer. It's just pushing the problem to someone else with unproven software. Unfortunately, we need a solution to the block size today. Holding Bitcoin back for these experimental technologies is a major mistake. And that also relates to his last point. We just don't have time for this. A payment system that can only handle 300,000 transactions per day is not worth my time or anyone else's. I highly doubt Elon Musk would waste his time on such a pitifully minuscule system. And I doubt Larry Page, Steve Jobs, or Warren Buffett would either. If we want to change the world, we need to think bigger. Take the world's largest transactional system and multiply it by a factor of 1,000. That's what we need to focus on. We don't have time to waste on systems that can't change the world. Want to change it? Do it now. Otherwise, the true thought leaders of our next generation will ditch Bitcoin and make something that will.
In an internet meme, ain't nobody got time for that.
Yep.
See, I just shortened it down for you, so there you go.
The thing people have to remember is Bitcoin is something that's brand new. Nothing like it has ever been tried in the history of mankind. So there are bound to be issues with it. That's not the problem. What is the problem is the censorship of new ideas and steadfast refusal to fix these problems. But ultimately and thankfully, it's not up to the Bitcoin Core devs. If a majority of the blockchain decides to do it differently, that's all that's needed.
Agreed.
Hi, I'm Dave. You may recognize me from previous Bogosity episodes. I'm also part of a podcast, the Superplex Brothers Podcast. Head on over to superplexbros.com. You can check out the podcast for video games and pro wrestling. We also have news, reviews, and editorials and all kinds of stuff just to talk about video games and pro wrestling and everything else that comes in between. So if you're into that, why don't you come check us out?
And now it's time to carjack this week's biggest bogon emitter.
Ooh. Oh, my goodness.
And this week it goes to Harford County, Maryland State Attorney Joseph I. Cassily, who says that asset forfeiture reform is just funding drug dealers. That's up your way, isn't it, Charlie?
Oh, and Travis as well. So, yeah, this is just going to be great.
Yeah, so we've talked a lot on this podcast about asset forfeiture. This is when they say, hey, Charlie, your car was used in a drug transaction. We don't have to charge you with anything. We don't even have to provide any evidence. We're just taking your car.
It's legalized extortion, but then again, people just say, hey, well, he has a badge, and that's okay. It's amazing the things that they get away with. I can't get it back because, well, this person did a bad thing. I didn't do a bad thing. I have to go pay up the wazoo for it, you know?
Yeah, and most of the time, you can't even get a hearing in court to say, hey, this was wrong. I want my property back.
You can't do that. Yeah.
But Cassily's all over this, just like he's all over mandatory minimums, something else we've pointed out all the problems with. But his compromise, if I can use that term very loosely, is to say the police can perform their own review as to whether the seizure was proper. So I'm going to take your car and then I'm going to perform my own review that says that it was okay for me to take your car.
Like I said, if anyone else does it, that's illegal. And if the cop does it, it's A-OK. This whole notion, I you know what? I blame cop shows. I blame every single cop show out there because they make the villains in the cop shows so over the top, even though in the reality is they're not that. You know, there are monsters out there, but more often than not, they're some people who just do some stupid things. They don't need to go to jail for like, you know, for 1,000 years. Sadly, what's happened when people have minor drug offenses, that sort of thing.
So he says, quote, to answer concerns for those who might be wrongfully arrested for drug dealing, police and prosecutors have crafted new legislation to create an administrative review process to allow for a review of the seizing officer's decision and return of the property. The legislature should be willing to work with law enforcement on a common sense compromise. And the first problem is, almost never is the person actually arrested. They seize the assets, but they don't arrest or even charge the person.
Again.
And he knows that. He's just lying.
Exactly. The person is, the property is stolen by the state. That's theft. But again, the state does it. That's A-OK.
And he says, quote, the second portion deals with restricting Maryland's police from acting on information received from other state or federal law enforcement agencies to intercept drug money. So if DEA agents in New York or New Jersey alert Maryland troopers to intercept a car carrying $250,000 in drug proceeds, or if North Carolina police give Maryland troopers a description of some buyers with $50,000 to buy heroin and cocaine, this new law would prevent those Maryland troopers from seizing the money and turning over the money to federal authorities. Although the United States Attorney General has strict procedures for when these proceeds can be turned over to the feds, this absurd law would require Maryland law enforcement to return the money to the drug dealers. Fortunately, it does not require the police to apologize. Not a single word of that is true. Nothing in the bill stops partnering with other agencies. Nothing in the bill stops seizures when they're, what's the legal term? When it happens alongside an arrest. You can do searches and seizures that go along with an arrest. They just won't be able to grab the funds for themselves. That's all that this says.
Yeah, and this is, again, lies. And, again, this goes right back to the war on drugs. You know, it would actually be hilarious if that was true, that they actually could just return the money to the drug dealers. It's like the people who, you know, understand prohibition, if they just have brain damage or whatever, they understand that when they made alcohol illegal, you saw all this criminality come up. And they saw all these people doing all this type of bathtub gyms, people getting blinded, and then these people getting shot up and killed in these alcohol wars. And the thing they seem to forget, because when they actually ended prohibition, the alcohol rates went down. It didn't go up. It went down around 30 or 35%. This stuff goes right back into the war on drugs. It goes right back to it.
Well, and you're also talking about a guy who, according to this TechDirt article, and they quote him actually doing it, defending local law enforcement when they arrested a person for filming a police officer on duty, something else we've covered quite a bit and isn't illegal anywhere, but actually raided his house to try to find other recordings of policemen, again, which weren't at all illegal.
It's interesting because it is a two mic recording state. I understand that.
But that's just between two citizens, that when the police are on duty performing their jobs.
That's not in private. That's public.
Yeah.
And I hear them say, well, they're police officers. You're making their job hard. I'm like, do they hear themselves? People want to rationalize this, say, well, we save lives. Yeah, whatever.
Well, check out how Cassily rationalizes it. Quote, it does not matter to the legislature that much of the money forfeited to law enforcement over this time has gone to drug abuse prevention education, enabled the police to acquire up-to-date technology, and paid for training. You know what? He's right. It doesn't matter, and it shouldn't. People have the right to keep their property, and if police are going to take it, they need to prove that the owners were involved in criminal activity. If anything, this bill doesn't go anywhere near far enough.
Exactly. Seriously, they actually have a, was it here or New York? They actually try to warm up your car. You could get fired for $125 for trying to warm your own car. I mean, I gotta look this up, but I'll probably get the link to you. And I'll put the link, I'll find it and put it up there because, hey, it's legal extortion. That's what it is. If mafia guys and everyone else did the same thing, that would be called extortion. There's no pretty way about it. Like, well, the kind of, no. It's extortion. Period. End of discussion.
So Cassily closes out, quote, fortunately for the citizens of Maryland, plagued by the devastation of drug addiction, violent neighborhoods, and drug-funded gangs, Governor Hogan vetoed the bill that threatens to remove this weapon from law enforcement's arsenal. Legislators who pretend to want to deal with the scourge of heroin are anxious to override the veto. The citizens need to contact their legislators.
Wow. Oh, by the way, I've actually found it. There's actually a couple of these, including West Virginia. Kansas City Police have been doing this as well. Oh, goodness. Oh, gosh. It's, like I said, we got to have this thing repeated. Legalize extortion.
And I love the way this TechDirt article closes out, quote, if a veto override is successful, and of course, hopefully it will be, it will further demonstrate the widening gulf between law enforcement and the public they're supposed to serve, which is exactly what's been happening.
Yeah. You know, people up in this momentum of the marijuana situation in Colorado, in Seattle, in California, in Ohio, they had the thing on ballot. In D.C., they voted on this and passed it. It's getting to a point that people are looking at and saying, you know, maybe this whole war on drugs is complete BS. And then you have this situation, acid forcers, and even John Oliver has spoken about this as well. Maybe in a couple years, maybe people will look at it and say, maybe this should not happen anymore.
So all of that makes Joseph Cassily this week's biggest bogon emitter. Hackers, terrorists, the NSA. But I repeat myself, your online security is under attack, and the weakest point is your password. That's why you need LastPass. LastPass plugs into your browser and allows you to randomly generate strong, unique passwords anywhere on the web, all protected by one master password. LastPass sets up in minutes and gives you secure automatic logins throughout the web, synchronizing across all your browsers and all your computers, at home, at work, or on the road. It even securely stores sensitive form data, including credit card numbers. Back up sensitive documents, membership info, Wi-Fi logins, and more. And with LastPass Premium, you can get these benefits on other applications and even mobile devices, and also get priority customer support. Sign up at password.pagosity.tv for a free month of LastPass Premium. Log in securely everywhere using the last password you'll ever have to remember. Go to password.pagosity.tv and get LastPass now. And now it's time to pixelate the naughty bits of this week's
Idiot Extraordinaire.
And this week, it goes to Facebook, which censored a picture of a mermaid statue because of boobies.
Oh no! What were the children? Who will protect the children, Shane?
So Facebook's policy says that they censor speech that's deemed to be hateful or just doing a whole bunch of corporate mumbo-jumbo to take down photos, which is actually part of a trend where Facebook is going more towards restricted speech than free expression.
And yet, all of these moronic BuzzFeed articles still pop up on my feed. When is that going to go away, Facebook? If you got rid of that, most people will be on your side.
So this happened when a Danish public official published a photo of a bronze mermaid statue. And according to this article, quote, she wanted to post a link to her blog, which included a shot of the bronze statue, when she received a rejection notification from the site. The message, which Miss, I can't pronounce that name, shared on her social media accounts, said the Little Mermaid image contained too much bare skin or sexual undertones. It added that the rules applied even if an image had artistic or educational purposes. And this is TechDirt again. They published a picture of the mermaid, and there's nothing sexual about it. She's like sitting on a rock, and she's kind of in like this contemplative mood or something.
Yes, it's a nice little art piece. I mean, I've seen more offensive artwork out there and shared, thanks to you, Travis. Thank you. But this is really harmless. I mean, I walked in Smithsonian when I was a kid. I saw stuff like this, you know, and I didn't get too traumatized. And it's the human body, people. It's not horrible. It's not evil. It's not anything else. Did people look at this and say, oh my gosh, triggered?
So Facebook relented and approved the image and clarified the rules on nudity. So it will allow photos of paintings, sculptures, and other art that depicts nude figures. The problem is, what does that mean? The idea of what is pornographic is highly subjective and impossible to find. Now, on top of that, you've got the question of what is artistic, which, if anything, is even more subjective and hard to define. What's their policy going to be other than we'll know it when we see it?
Exactly. I mean, porn could be something like twerking on, like, on shaking their butt on Facebook or something like that. Is that going to be, you know, are they going to ban those type of things? Are dances? Are they going to ban, you know, what's going to be the whole art thing? Because once you start doing the whole what's porn and what's not porn, I understand there's like real crazies type porn. I mean, shoot, Twitter's the Wild West, you know, that stuff is like.
Oh, Tumblr's even worse.
Oof, that stuff is a little bit crazy. When I try to go any type of Tumblr site, I always wear a protective type suit because I need to protect myself from the images.
Yeah, get your hazmat gear on.
Yeah, and the bullshit mostly from there.
Oh yeah, the stupid is deep there. You definitely got to have your waders on for that.
Yes, but when you look at again with this mermaid statue, what are you going to say? What's going to be porn or not going to be porn? You're not going to be able to really legislate what that is. It's all within the eyes of a beholder. What's it going to be? Is it going to be like a porn app? I mean, I don't think there's an app for that yet.
People have tried and they failed time and time again. You know, like those porn filters you put on your kids to stop show. They don't work because porn isn't anything. There's just.
Yeah. I mean, heck, it's everything and nothing. So I if they somehow find a way to do it, that person's going to be rich beyond belief because, you know, there's going to be so many parents to download the stuff and everything. But until that day actually happens, we're going to have to stuck with this situation. We're going to be stuck here. The reason why this thing got there, someone out there probably got triggered. Hashtag get rid of all bronze statues. They're too triggering.
There's probably a Tumblr for that too, bronze statue porn.
There probably is.
Well, I mean, there have been pictures like that where, you know, there's like a statue that's in a position and a woman positions herself on and takes a picture to make it look like she's having sex with the statue and stuff like that. Is that going to be allowed?
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, and then this seems to be one of those old type of art type of things when you had these drawings of women who are nude and such.
It used to be on our money.
Yeah. Used to be, but now, you know, people are like, you know, will be, oh my gosh, it's like no one just reads a history book. We have the internet for a reason. Like, you can search this stuff up, but yet people rather just look at cats and go on Tumblr.
So all of that makes Facebook this week's
Idiot Extraordinaire.
Well, that wraps up this stupid edition of the Bogosity Podcast. Come join the discussion at forum.bogosity.tv and feel free to join in by sending a question, statement, news article, or rant to podcast@bogosity.tv. You can even record it as an audio file if you want. This podcast depends on you to keep going, so please donate using the links on the website or the QR codes on the YouTube video. You can also become a patron at patreon.bogosity.tv and get the podcast and YouTube videos early and without ads or promos. Thank you for listening, and thanks again to Charles Thomas for joining me.
No problem.
Until next time, here's a quote from Tommy Smothers. The only valid censorship of ideas is the right of people not to listen. The Bogosity Podcast is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution on Commercial No Derivatives 4.0 International License. Bogosity. Do you want answers to creationist claims against evolution? Would you like to know more about evolution yourself, or even engage creationists more directly, with actual peer-reviewed sources to back you up? My book, How Evolution is Scientific, is designed to show the basics of evolutionary theory and how it is so well supported using the scientific method. It's impeccably sourced, with references to the actual scientific material, and is arranged using the creationists' own criteria of what is scientific. Using their own arguments against them, see how evolution is scientific, but creationism is not, based on observations, accurate predictions, logic, and evidence. Get answers to common creationist claims, and even a primer on abiogenesis, the start of all life. It's all in my book, How Evolution is Scientific, available at Amazon and on Kindle, EPUB, and PDF as well. Get How Evolution is Scientific and never be taken in by creationists again.
Also, Facebook is the internet extraordinaire because they still let people use BuzzFeed to just see share all their pictures and such. Why, Facebook? Why are you still letting people use BuzzFeed? Why?